you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine atmosphere, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Well, hello, boys and girls, and all the fun, frippery things flying around over the lake. I don't know what the hell they are, but they're probably doing their weird things. It's going to say, welcome to another After Rot Amazing Time, and tonight we have on the show Val Tobin. How's it going, Val?
It's going great, thanks. Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm happy to have you, because I like having people to talk to. It's like I'm actually a real person sometimes.
I really love your profile picture.
Oh, thank you. A friend of mine did that ages ago. He was doing a zombie coffee table book and asked for a couple of volunteers. So apparently, he originally did that artwork as like 1,000 layers in Adobe. I was like, that's some impressive stuff there.
A coffee table book about zombies. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, an art book. He's an artist.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I'd love to see that.
I don't know if he ever actually ended up doing it. I know he worked towards it, but I don't know if he actually finished it.
But I think that would be popular. I mean, zombies, I don't know if their time has come and gone. I think Walking Dead is still highly popular, right?
Well, depends on who you talk to. I'm a huge zombie fan, obviously, by the nickname Zombie Zach. I will still continue to watch zombies. I've been watching zombie stuff since the 70s.
Yes, me too.
And I don't think the phase is going away. It might adjust a little bit, but... Ooh, you're a zombie fan. Ooh, what's your favorite zombies?
Well, the original Walking Dead and, I Am Legend... what was it called? The one with Charlton Heston. That wasn't called I Am Legend, right? Omega Man, yes.
Love that movie.
Yeah. And, I started watching The Walking Dead, but they kind of lost me after a few seasons. I thought they'd...
Jump the shark?
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to say that, but...
Oh, I'll say it. I've said it before on the show. Season 8, when they killed Carl and then sort of killed Rick, it's like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, there was a point where suddenly I thought, I don't know what happened, but I'm done.
Well, I knew exactly what the point was for me. And everybody who's listened to the show, when I've commented about it at that time, when I stopped watching, they know. They knew. They heard it.
Now, were they, do you know if they were continuing to follow the graphic novels? Because I think they started off pretty well. But, you know, it's like with Game of Thrones, when they start to diverge from canon, I guess, that's usually where I walk away.
Well, have you read the comics?
Think I had, by the way I'm talking, but no.
Yeah. I read the comics. And I love the comics. Comics was way better than the show overall. But think about it as a stream. So many times they diverged, then they came back and intersected, then they diverged. And then I think around, season 5 or 6, they just kept going right field. And then The comics started taking some of the thoughts from the show and integrating. Now, what's his face? Oh, what the heck was his name? I'm bad with names. The writer. Well, him. Originally was going to finish the comics around issue 60. It ended up going up to about 142 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then doing the show, he said he was going to diverge it anyways because he wanted to tell a different story. So, but I thought they did it good, like most of it. But the governor in the comics and in the show, completely mm-hmm. different kinds of people. Way worse in the comics.
Have you watched the Sandman series?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because so I'm currently reading the second Sandman book because I wanted to, like the graphic novel, because I wanted to watch that ahead of season two coming out, because I thought they did the first season really well.
I agree. They did a wonderful adaptation, which is not a 100% true to the comic, but this is the thing. It was a good story on its own. Fun, neat, weird. I loved it.
Yeah, and the acting was excellent. The actor who played Morpheus was just excellent.
Yeah, no, I had nothing bad to say about anybody in that show. If anything, I would say that they were too much their characters, and I enjoyed it too much, and I wanted more.
Yeah, I definitely wanted more. So I actually, the comic book store here in town, when it was going out of business, they had this huge sale, and I picked up, I think, 2, 3, and 4 of the Sandman. I got the whole X-Files graphic novel set for like $50.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really, I scored big there.
Well, just so you know, I also have a comic shop. I do it on the weekends.
And where is that, in Toronto?
Yeah, it's at the Fantastic Flea Market in Mississauga. So if you're ever around, come visit.
I don't really get much to Mississauga, but I am. Do you do like Comic Cons and stuff?
I've done Fan Expo, but I don't do Comic Cons much per se anymore, because the amount that volume you have to sell at one of those shows to make up your cost to be there and the work and effort, I've decided I'm not so much into it. Which is going to lead me to segue now, because we're here mostly to talk about you as an author. And I've read the short story. Oh, where was it? I had it on my screen. I really did. Trust me, I did. Oh, where did
Storm Lake.
Storm Lake, that one. As the prelude to The Hunted. So, tell us a little bit about some of that. And I see that you have a whole bunch of other books, but they also look like Harlequin romances, those ones.
No. No.
I'm just
no.
saying, the covers, that one, and that one, they totally have Harlequin romance written up. Although I do like the cover of Earthbound. That looks neat.
I do have romantic suspense, but it's more, it's less Harlequin and more Nora Roberts. But we're mostly going to talk about Storm Lake, because that's my horror. Storm Lake and The Hunted. And this past November was working on the first draft of a sequel to The Hunted.
Excellent.
Which I'm still working on, because I'm juggling projects, and so I'm still finishing off the first draft of The Hunted sequel while I'm preparing book 4 of my urban fantasy series for publication. So two things at once.
Excellent.
That's how I multitask. But the Storm Lake stories started out just as the short story. It was just going to be a short story, and that was it. And I got the idea for it, God, like 40 years ago. We have a family cottage, and it's in kind of a remote area of the Kawarthas. It's up near Apsley, and you know, we don't have a lot of neighbors around us, or especially at that time we didn't.
North of Algonquin or west or east of it?
It is near Algonquin. So you know where Bancroft is?
Yes, I've driven through there.
Yes, so it's close to Bancroft.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, most people don't know Apsley, but more people know Bancroft.
Roger.
Yeah, so in the springtime, when all the none of the trees have leaves, and everything's kind of gray and misty, and we would go up there, and it would be kind of creepy, you know, and because we'd be in this isolated cottage, and I noticed that some of the trees had these these large bulges on them. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't know those were called burls, and that it's just a, you know, a wowie in the tree kind of thing. And it's just, it's not weird or anything. But when I was looking at them, I thought, gee, what's gestating in that?
It's a bum tree.
Yes.
I read that.
So I started thinking about what it could be like if it was a horror story. And I got a little bit like the, I know some people weren't thrilled with the ending of the short story because it was open-ended. And I typically never really liked the open-ended ending, but it was a short story, and it was kind of like the way, you know, have you ever read Stephen King's The Mist?
Yes.
So that was one of the first stories that I had read that was open-ended that pissed me off.
Okay.
And so you'd think I wouldn't want to duplicate that, but I was experimenting at the time with stories that you're supposed to like sort of extrapolate what might happen or the things that could happen. Actually, I just lied. The first book I read that that was open-ended at the end that really annoyed me was Gone with the Wind, because
I can safely say
the way
that
ended. Pardon me?
I can safely say I've never read that.
Well, have you seen the movie?
I can safely say I've never seen the movie.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Just anyone who has will know what I'm talking about. Just because it's, you know, it's not really a romance, but it had a romance in it, but it was more historical fiction and it was set in the Civil War. But you would think if it was a romance, it would have a happily ever after ending, and it did not. So it was open-ended. You know, in a story where boy meets girl, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, you're supposed to get the girl back. But in this instance, that didn't happen. And she was determined, you know, saying that she was determined to get him back. But that's how it ends. And so I had, at the time I was writing Storm Lake, I wanted to, like, these were kids. And so their story would go on. And I just wanted to kind of give the impression of what the possibilities were or what they might find when they reached Peterborough, which is where they were headed. But they had escaped, but, you know, the story was going to go on. But I had enough people bugging me for what happens next that I thought, okay, well, what does happen next? So I picked it up like 12 years later in The Hunted, where these creatures are well entrenched in around the world and in society, and people have to live with it and deal with it. And how would they do that? So I came up with the protectors and how Rachel wants to eradicate them and has become a protector instead of doing what she had originally wanted to do, which was to be a detective.
Which, if you read Storm Lake, has a bit of that, an excerpt or whatever at the end of it, right?
Right.
Yeah. I enjoyed that. Actually, it was a good segue to go from the one, the short story, where it's like, hey, they're 14-year-olds, and, well, she's 14, and the other one...
Yeah. She's 13, and he was 7.
Yeah. And how it's like, ah, scary crap happened, and then thing, and then it goes over to the beginning of that, and it's like, hey, by the way, there's a whole other book to read. Is it just one book? Yeah, it's just one book, right?
Just one book. And then I'm working on the sequel to that right now.
Okay, cool. So, did you build a world based on the real world, or did you just sort of start saying this point, that point, and then we'll just fuzz out the rest of it as part of the world building concepts? Like, did you build an entire thing on it, or did you just build a portion of it that you were working with as far as the story was going?
So it's based in a real world that's gone, you know, tits up kind of thing.
Bonkers.
Because you have these creatures that are invading. It's like it's almost like a take on Predator, or again, you know, like it sort of like what happened with Mist. You get this weird entity, these creatures being introduced into the scene, and it's not something anybody's used to. So then they have to pivot and deal with it. And it's life or death. Like, you know, you have no choice. You deal with it or you die.
Or you kill all of them.
Right. Well, that's...
which is generally a good response.
Yeah, and that's where they create these teams. Like, I was thinking it wouldn't fall under the, the police wouldn't be able to deal with these things. And at first, that's what's happening is everyone's, okay, call the police. Something terrible is going on and there's people being killed. But the police have no way of dealing with this. So society actually has to create a segment, a special sort of reserve team. And they can draw from, military or police, who might tend to gravitate into this, but to fight these monsters. But it was really interesting to have to come up with what society might create as a solution for this. And then, of course, you have, which you don't see in Storm Lake, because that's just when they first appear. But in The Hunted, where you have, of course, if you're going to have people wanting to eradicate these creatures, you're also going to have the activists who say, no, they're living creatures and we're protesting, that you want to kill them.
Well, this is Canada. It's what we do. Amongst other things.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the activist supporter thing is, it's a good angle. I've seen that in a zombie comic. What the hell was it? Oh, yeah, it was one of the Marvel Zombies ones where Canada was, Prime Minister was a zombie. Was it Justin Bieber? I think it was. Oh. I thought that was hilarious. So it was funny.
Oh, was it a graphic novel or?
It was a comic book episodic period. Then they combined it into a trade paperback. That's the way the comics are nowadays. They either start as a story where you bring individual issues, and then you collect them, or you start as a graphic novel and just release it as the one book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other one I picked up at that comic book sale was The Boys.
Good comic. Great show. A little violent. And a little gory.
Very violent, yeah.
A little graphic. Really?
Yeah, definitely. If they put the graphic back in graphic novel.
Totally inappropriate for people under the age of, let's call it 18. Well, yes, maybe 16. Sure. People are more mature nowadays at a younger age.
Yeah, it's always hard to tell, when people ask me, can my kid read your books? And I'm like, mostly no.
Well, I'll always say, are they okay with Five Nights at Freddy? Yes? Okay, then they can read this. They can't read that. That is not Five Nights at Freddy's level. That there, that's within that range, that's okay. It's good to have a thing to point at as an example.
But, The Hunger Games is something that was geared to kids, right? And niece was reading it in grade 7, and at the time I hadn't read it. All I had heard was it's about kids killing kids, and I thought, this is what they're reading in school in grade 7.
Well,
it seemed a little sadistic, and I didn't know how graphic they got, but it was a little disturbing to think that they were pitting these kids to fight to the death.
I'm trying to remember the name of a book, and it's escaping me, and it bugs me. Jack, what was the name of the book? That's obviously with very little information, he's not going to be able to come up with an answer, but damn it. They're on an island. They're marooned.
Lord of the Flies?
Lord of the Flies, that one. I had Lord in my head, but I couldn't get the flies out. And then Animal Farm with the animals. Same idea. Those were very, very graphic books. And then I'm getting old. My brain is starting to fart way more than it should. Watership Down, and the other one was The Bush and the Rabbits.
Watership Down was The Rabbits.
Okay, then I'm just thinking Watership Down. Yeah, very graphic adult concepted stories, but geared with younger people and ideas. But
yes,
I don't know. I mean, I had a particularly weird childhood with growing up and reading, so.
Well, so did I. Dante. I mean, I read The Exorcist when I was in grade 8.
Awesome.
So when I'm horrified at The Hunger Games and the thought that my grade 7 niece was reading it, I really should think back to what I was reading at that age, and it was worse.
Yes. Well, my first foray into the dark side was Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri. So I was always in that space. But Jack references a movie that you may or may not have seen, Battle Royale.
No.
Okay. That's a Japanese movie about kids fighting kids to the death. Good movie. Societal concept stuff, but heavy. And mine, what I would throw in the same vein, was What the Gods Will, which was a movie that came out a couple years ago. Very dark, very heavy, and all about trying to survive some gods, but whatever. So
yeah, like when I first heard the premise of The Hunger Games, it kind of reminded me of Stephen King's The Running Man.
Oh, I love that movie, and The Shore, and the story.
Yeah, the story. I mean, I think the story was better. I don't know that Stephen King's horror novels translate that well onto the screen, but maybe they're going to start doing some better things with it.
Watched any of the miniseries?
Well, we started watching The Stand. So I saw the original Stand miniseries.
Which was amusing.
Yeah.
Yes. Trash Can Man!
Yeah, and we started watching the remake, mm-hmm. but I don't know, for some reason it petered out. We just stopped watching it.
That was the exact expression I was going to use, because I think I got 3 or 4 episodes in and it's like, oh, look, squirrel, and went somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think like months later I was like, oh, weren't we watching The Stand? But I had no real interest in going back to it. There was so many other shiny things to go after.
So many. I can't even think off the top of my head of how many, because I watch a few of them.
Yeah, it's funny, like, what really catches your interest, you know? Like, Stranger Things, binged it. Whenever they released the season. Now, I can't remember if they released it all at once, or I think maybe
they split
after
it.
So whatever was out, I was watching it, like just devouring it.
Yep, they released the whole first 9 or 8 episodes, and then 3 episodes afterwards, and the 3 episodes afterwards were a little longer than normal. But they do that on purpose. I understand, and I think it's because what they're trying to do is make sure that if you get the free trial, you have to come back in and actually pay for at least a month.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody's asking, Evie is also in the chat room, asking about the zombie children's book. Little does she know, a friend of mine actually released a children's zombie book. It's called Okay to Be a Zombie by Danny Everett and, oh, I can't remember his friend's associate, Nathaniel something. Damn it, can't remember.
Oh, you know what that reminds me of, too, is the Goosebumps books.
Yes.
My grandson and I, he needed someone to read with him. So I suggested that, we start reading books together. And what we do is we started once a week. So once a week, we would get on Google Meet. And so mm-hmm. he would read to me from a chapter of a book, and the book we started with was a Goosebumps book. I can't remember what it was about zombies, but it was a kids were zombies, and I thought, well, this is interesting again to gear this towards children, and But I didn't really think it was inappropriate. I thought it was actually kind of, it was pretty entertaining. And I thought I would probably have devoured all those Goosebump books when I was his age too. But then right after that, we went on to Harry Potter. So the Harry Potter series. And slowly our reading times increased from once a week to twice a week. And now it's three times a week. And we're currently on the fourth Harry Potter book, so Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, and that has taken a bit of a dark turn.
Yes.
And that's... I didn't, like, someone warned me, like, when we went to the wizard store in Toronto to buy my grandson some Harry Potter related Christmas gifts, and the, you know, I was telling the store owner that, you know, my grandson and I were reading the books, and he asked how old he was, and Jack was 10 at the time. So I said, yeah, he's going to be 11 soon. And he said, well, you know, the fourth Harry Potter book kind of gets a little dark. Like they start,
a little bit.
I don't know if they get even darker after that, but yeah, we're near the end of it. And I was like, oh, somebody actually died.
Yeah. So I never really liked Harry Potter much. And I say this every once in a while, and I don't mean to put it down or anybody who enjoys it down. It's like, it's fine, as everybody enjoys different things. But the only parts of the Harry Potter series that I liked in the movies was the last movie, because of some of the things that he got into, which I don't know at what point the books are like that and mirror it, but that's pretty much all I would be liking for Harry Potter myself.
Yeah, I hadn't. So I had bought the first two books for my son when my kids were kids, but he never really got into it, so I didn't buy any more, because I mean, I read them and I thought they were okay, but I wasn't hooked on them. But it's really been kind of fun and an eye-opening experience rereading the first two with my grandson and seeing him just getting captivated with it. And then at the same time, what we've been doing is he'll come over here about every couple of weekends, and we read from The Hobbit. So we're about three quarters of the way through The Hobbit, and every time we hit a milestone, we watch one of the movies. So
right. Cool.
So that's what we do with the Harry Potter too. We finish the book, we watch the movie.
Okay, excellent. Actually, yeah. It's a good way to tie it in, because it's like, for me, I introduce comics to kids and to the parents of kids. It's like, well, this is a good way to get people to read, because when they're at that age, they're still looking at pictures saying, oh, pretty pictures. Oh, words mean. Oh, that's what actions mean. And if you're connecting the book to the movies and whatever, then you're getting the full visual medium being tied into the written medium, which is cool.
Yeah. And so we've been able to discuss, okay, so how did you like what they did in the movie as opposed to what they did with the book? And you know, he knows my feelings on what they did with the Hobbit movies versus what the book is. I don't know if you've read the book and watched the movies, but I was not pleased with what they did with the Hobbit movies. I mean, for crying out loud, what is it? They made four movies out of one small book.
Yeah. Well, they took six books to make three movies, and again, they still didn't capture everything for the Lord of the Rings. But yes, the Hobbit movie was a little, sorry, the Hobbit trilogy was a little excessive. And absolutely, more of a fun thing rather than an actual serious fantasy or whatever.
Yeah, and if you're going to you know, if you're one of the fans that likes them to stick to canon, it was like, what are they doing? The Toriel thing, and why is Legolas there? You know, and they just did some stuff that I was like not happy with whatsoever. I thought they did Peter Jackson did the Lord of the Rings fairly well. Like I could complain, but. You know, there were things in there that I was like, okay, well, I'll just zone out now and wait for the plot to return. You know, like, especially in the second movie where they were putting characters where they weren't supposed to be and stuff like that. So, and that what they did to Faramir, I didn't like.
Okay. Again, I say this frequently, not everything for everyone. I watch weird stuff, and I know a lot of people watch Gone with the Wind or other things, and it's all good. Oh, wait, there's actually an even longer version that is like 14 hours or more. Interesting. Eventually, I'll probably watch that.
Of
but
what?
The not Lord today. Of the Rings? Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I know that the full running time is 12 hours.
You know, overall, I thought he did a great job of it. I mean, Peter Jackson, well, he didn't need to leave out the scouring of the Shire, which was a sore spot for me. But like I said, there was overall, I thought it was a great job.
I missed the scouring.
Pardon?
I wanted to see the scouring.
Yeah. And I thought it was important. But I mean, I suppose I could understand why he left it out.
Happy Disney.
It's like leaving out Tom Bombadil, but I could excuse leaving out Tom Bombadil more than I could excuse the scouring of the Shire.
Yep, we can agree with that. And I keep having this song going through my head, and I keep forgetting the one last word. They're taking the hobbits to Isengard. There it is.
Isengard.
Yes, they keep that song keeps popping in my head anytime I talk about Lord of the Rings or elves or Legolas or anything. And somebody's posted a graphic of Legolas in the chat room. So, yeah, so you like fantasy as well, because I see that you've written a couple of fantasy books as well. You call them urban fantasies?
Urban fantasy, because it's
urban
set in,
fantasy,
you know,
supernatural suspense.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was reading from the thing.
Something like, so I also have a paranormal romance, which is what walk-in is. So what I did was I took the new age concept of the walk-in, which I don't know, a lot of people probably don't even know what that is. And I put it into evil hands. That's all I'm saying about that.
Okay. Evil hands. So if
yeah,
you're
well,
into
I
the
was
urban...
always fascinated by the concept of the walk-in. Well, I'll just give you a brief description of it.
And by walk-in, you mean like a walk-in clinic?
No.
Different walk-in.
So the New Age concept of the walk-in. A walk-in is, in New Age terms, it's when a soul is born and they feel all their lives like they shouldn't be here. And they make a higher self contract with another soul. So the soul that feels like they shouldn't be on the earth plane will contract with another soul so that one soul leaves and the other soul comes in and takes over the body. And so it's like the same body, but it's somebody else in it. And I was always kind of fascinated by how that would work. So of course, whenever something fascinates me to that extent, I end up making a story around it. So that's how it came to be. But you know, I was saying, well, couldn't you like, if you're a corrupt, you know, you want to put it to evil uses, you could sort of force someone out and have someone else come in. So anyways, that's what I kind of was doing with that.
Okay. No, that sounds interesting. Paranormal stuff. That's neat. Sort of like a, I had the thought in my head and then it went away. Not quite like a succubus or an incubi where they're teasing people out of their souls. More like a, hey, you're not doing anything with it anyway, so why don't I just walk in? Gotcha.
Right.
Cool. That's interesting. So I'm always fascinated by the relationship writers have with both the readers and the marketing and the publishing. So are you publishing these yourself on Amazon?
Yes. I publish them to different retailers, not just Amazon. So I take my books wide. So they're on Kobo as well.
Cool.
And, you know, Smashwords and other places, wherever they reach.
And do you find one works better than the other for you overall, or is it just pretty much a complete hodgepodge across the board?
Well, it takes time to build up an audience anywhere. And Smashwords doesn't even let you do any advertising or anything. So, like, it's kind of the only way you can promote stuff to, you know, promote to your stuff on Smashwords is if you do social media or something or advertising somewhere other than on Smashwords. But what I do like is Kobo allows you to do certain advertising, and a lot of it is like, it's not pay-per-click or anything. They just take a little percentage of the revenues. So, you know, they might take 1%. And so that, I think, works out to be more reasonable, because you only pay them if you make a sale.
Yeah, like a consignment sale.
So I kind of like, yeah, so I kind of like the way Kobo does it. But again, you have to like kind of start slow, and it takes time to build up some momentum on there. And I at first was exclusive to Amazon for a while when they came out with Kindle Unlimited. Mm-hmm. So of course, if you put your books into Kindle Unlimited, you get paid for page reads, but you have to be exclusive to Amazon, so you're not allowed to distribute anywhere else. But I never liked having my eggs all in one basket, so I ended up taking all my books out of Kindle Unlimited and taking them wide. So now I'm trying to just sort of build a following in other places. But I really appreciate what Kobo does for their authors with these promotions that you can join. I mean, they do give you the option too of paying, like, you know, you pay them $100 and they'll advertise you on their main pages and in their newsletters and stuff. But if you don't want to spring for that, you can apply to be part of their, you know, buy one, get one free sale, and or whatever promotions they're having. Like right now, I've got some books in a couple of different promotions. And the other, like yesterday, I had 7 sales, which is kind of great for me on Kobo. So
excellent. I'll give you the golf clap. Yay.
Yeah, I was happy and thrilled and pleased.
Okay, I'm going to throw 2 things out at you. One, just for our American listeners, it's a Canadian company, but they are worldwide distribution for stuff. And do you know where the name Kobo comes from?
No.
I didn't know until I just read it. It's an anagram for the name word book.
Oh.
It's like, oh, that's clever. I like that.
It is clever.
So they are based out of Toronto, and I know somebody who's involved with them, so I was just trying to remember if he's actually still involved or not, but I'm pretty sure he is. I just don't see his name listed anywhere here, so I'm not going to throw any of that out there because I don't like to be wrong. But yeah, Kobo, I've heard about them. They were at a great idea for how they were going to do stuff, and I think they're continuing to grow, and that's great. So apparently they got something going on with Walmart there. Cool. Ooh,
yeah, and they also have Kobo Plus, and which lets you get paid. Like, so it's kind of like Kindle Unlimited, but they don't force you to be exclusive to Kobo like, you know, Amazon does. So I can get paid for page reads if somebody who's in the Kobo Plus reader program borrows my books and reads them. But they do it, I think that I'm still trying to understand how they figure out how to pay their authors with this, because they were saying, oh, and if they read, you know, a minute, you get paid by minute of reading. And I'm like, I don't know how they calculate that, but Like it's so it's not quite page reads. I don't know. Maybe Amazon has a copyright on page reads or paying for page reads, but they describe theirs differently.
Well, yeah, it's probably some kind of thing. It's not necessarily a copyright, but more like a we don't want people to think that way.
Or trademarked, or yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably just a we don't want to be associated with them guys, so we'll come up with our own name. Meh. So speaking of social media, because that is always a touch button topic for me to talk about in when I have guests. Do you do a lot of social media or just a little bit?
I'm on Facebook a lot because, you know, Facebook has the older demographic and I'm old.
Are you saying I'm old? Actually, if you really want to be old, you'd still be on MySpace, which my MySpace is still active. I just don't go there.
I was actually never on MySpace, so. But yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and X. I still want to call it Twitter because, as a matter of fact, I guess I better change it to X in all of the backs of my books because I have.
Well, I see a number of people,
my contact, you know,
frequently still call it X, formerly known as Twitter. That seems like such a mouthful.
Yeah, I don't know. It was such a bizarre thing to do to change its name when everybody knows it so well as Twitter.
And it was a unique name already, so.
Yeah. And yeah, I did join Threads as well.
Ditto, but I just did that to save my name.
To save your name?
Yeah, to make like, sure I had it under my name rather than somebody else taking my name as well.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, I go on every once in a while and say, yeah, okay, cool, like, and then move on.
I didn't even think of somebody doing something like that.
Well, my online name, Zombie Zag, there's a plush toy, not mine, somebody else did it. There is a whole bunch of Zombie Zags out there, and we are not related. We are not all the same person. I'm the only one that's a talk show host. Everybody else out there is like either fans of something or something else and whatever. It's like,
Yeah, well, I do know someone who, she started her, it was a new age kind of business but her name is her brand. Mm-hmm. And someone, I guess this was in the beginning of the, you know, people setting up websites and stuff like that. And so she had her business name as a website, but she never got her name as a domain name, and someone mm-hmm. else bought it.
Yep.
And she had to pay thousands to get it.
Yeah. That's in Canada, at least, that's being pursued as an illegal practice. What do they call it? Domain name sitting?
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you know, a brand is going to become popular. You register the name in .ca, .com, .whatever the heck else out of the 1,000 different dots that are available to do. And you just wait for them to try and come and get you for the money. It's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my first name on the one domain and I changed it to something else completely and rejigged the whole thing. So it's like, that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the fun things about today's modern world. You just got to go with and go do it, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So we talked briefly before show about conventions. Do you do any?
I do.
Excellent.
I've hit some of the Comic-Cons, like the Cottage Country Comic-Con. And
I've heard about that one.
Pardon me?
I've heard about that one. A couple of friends went to that one.
Yeah, that was in Orillia. It was pretty good. I did pretty well there. I attend a lot of things through the writers community of York Region. Like mm-hmm. they subsidize the table, so it's a little bit, if you're a member. So
yep.
you can, I share a table with another author or we're in a group of authors. I'm not going to be going to the next Toronto Comic-Con, though, because, that's in March.
Yeah, it's right? coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. just my life is not going to let me do that right now. So I have to hopefully catch the next one.
Have you ever done Fan Expo?
Yeah, I do like the Fan. When's the next Fan Expo?
Fan Expo is usually the week before Labor Day. So late August or early September, depending on how it falls.
Yeah, so I've done the Fan Expos too, and I've done, once I did a signing at Chapters 2, which I should line up some more of those.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, and there's, you know, local things, like here in Newmarket, we had the WCYR does the bookshelf event every year or every couple of years now, which is sort of done at the same time as the Newmarket Farmers Market. And it's in last time it was outside next to the farmers market, but I liked it better when it was inside in the community center. But yeah, I try to catch as many conventions or shows as possible. Like, I'll be at the Link in Sutton in March.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something after that, too. Sure. So there's a Link and something else coming up, which I have to... Oh, the Aurora Street Festival is always in June, beginning of June, so I'll be there.
Have you ever tried to going to Ad Astra as a very science fiction themed convention or anything like that, where it's very specific themed besides just comics?
Yeah, I think I did an Ad Astra once.
Ad Astra was an interesting event. I haven't been to that in a very long time, but I've heard that it just basically was still the same.
Yeah, I think so. I think I did the one, and it was before the pandemic, so I'm not sure. I don't think I've even heard of when it came again.
I knew some people who attended the show. I can't really remember either when it was, but I know they moved the venue from wherever it was for the longest time, and they moved into somewhere in North York, and it's like everybody was complaining about how difficult it was to get to. It's like, oh, okay, whatever.
Yes, I remember they moved it. So, yeah, I haven't been since. But I'm not, I think it was just because it didn't work out for me, not because I didn't want to.
Right. No, that makes sense. I mean, talking to people, like, I like to talk to people in the shows. I mean, especially Fan Expo. I'll talk to anybody pretty much, as long as they catch my eye and interest or something. And it's like everybody's journey to there and from there and with there is different. I mean, the one year I went in there, I was talking to this one guy, and I was like, I was trying to cheer him up because he didn't sell anything the entire 4 days. And he was in the Artist Alley, which was a $750 booth cost, and he didn't sell a single thing. And he was like, he was very sad and maudlin about it. It's like, dude, it's your first time going there, right? Yeah. You got to understand. Look at it as marketing. You can't guarantee you'll make a dollar. You can't guarantee you'll make a thousand. So it's like, you, every time anybody's going to a convention, it's the experience you bring to it as much as anything else that you get back from it is what you put into it. Talked to another gentleman. He was just down to a couple tables, and he sold thousands of dollars worth of stuff because he was having fun. And it's a different game for everybody to go there.
Yeah, I really do enjoy attending these things because it's really nice to talk to people in person and ask them, you know, talk to them about books and reading. And, you know, even if they don't end up buying one of my books, it's nice to talk to them about, you know, well, what authors do you like to read and what types of books do you like to read? Because it's great to connect with fellow readers.
And fellow writers.
Yes, that too, especially if I'm going as a representative of the WCYR. We do talk to people about writing as well, because, you know, we have our flyers and stuff available there if anyone's interested in joining, becoming a member. We can talk to them about that too. So,
does the WCYR stand for?
Writers Community of York Region.
There you go. So So you're also signing people up, right?
Yep. Yeah. Excellent. Or, you know, taking down names for the, you know, if they want to sign up for the newsletter, or handing out, you know, just flyers and stuff if they want to just take it home and sign up online. But it's nice to talk to aspiring writers or, you know, authors who are in different points in along the journey to publication, talk about what they're writing and, you know, how they started and what they want to do with it.
And how they want to change the world. Because that's what I do with my writing. I'm going to change the world. Screw all this negativity crap. I'm fixing this. I may eliminate a few people along the way, but that's like the cost, right?
Well, you can always kill them off as a character in your book.
Or you could do it in real life and become a... I'm not going to go there. So there's a joke. Kill one person, you're a murderer. Kill a handful of people, you're a serial killer. Kill a million people, you're an effect of history changing the world. Something like that. I always get that one wrong as to what it was supposed to stand for, but it puts it into perspective.
A friend of mine gave me this little sign that I put when I go to events. It says, if you were in my book, you'd be dead by now.
Yes, that is amusing. Very amusing. Wait, serial zombies?
It's very true, yeah. You know, because I've thought about the stories that I write and what the main characters have to go through, and I think, I don't know if I would have survived any of that.
All right. So I've gotten this discussion before with other people. Zombie apocalypse occurs. Are you going to survive or are you going to fail?
I guarantee you I would fail.
Exactly. So I had this discussion with a few Texans and they said, no, we're going to be good. We got all the guns. We got all the bullets. It's like, yes, and all it takes is that one guy watch every single zombie movie where he gets infected or she gets infected, doesn't tell anyone, turns, yep. And all of a sudden you've got them one right at your back and you're facing the front. It's like, oh, guess what? You're all dead. Oh, not only that, your gun jams. Oh, we'll keep it oiled and cleaned. You just shot off 1,000 rounds. It heats up. It's going to jam. What are you going to do then? Oh, wait, there's a million zombies right there. I enjoy this conversation a lot when I engage with people about it because it's amusing.
It is. You know, like, did you see World War Z?
Yep.
Because that was a different take, you know, like with the zombies running really fast. So it's like, oh my God, if you speed them up, like, I have no chance.
Well, just so you know, in Romero's original story, they were fast and they just got slower as they as time went by. So fast zombies has been a thing. Rage Zombies from 28 Days Later is awesome. And I hear they're going to finally do the third movie, which is going to be cool. So looking forward to that. But yeah, fast zombies, slow zombies, puddle zombies, all kinds of zombies. Giant zombies. Those were fun too.
Yeah. So did you watch The Last of Us then?
Yep. Mushroom zombies.
Yes.
I love that. And how did you feel about the ending of that show? Did you watch the whole thing?
I did watch the whole thing. I'm trying to remember how I felt about the ending. Like, so have you been playing the game as well?
I never played the game, but I heard about the game ending and then how it was like, oh, that mirrors the game ending. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also...
My granddaughter plays that.
I could see that.
So she was telling me they were following, the show was following the game pretty well, she said.
Yep. Did you see the parody crossover, Mario Brothers, Last of Us? It's awesome.
No.
It's funny as hell. It's a-me, Mario! And he's driving around in the Last of Us world, and it's like, oh my God. It's hilarious. Oh, somebody had a comment for you. Are you sure you're a real Canadian because you didn't say World War Z?
Oh yeah, that's funny.
I was going to let it slide.
Yeah, that's funny. I had a friend whose name was Enzo, and he said he was in the U.S. and somebody, I guess he had to spell his first name maybe when he was checking into a hotel or something. So he said, it's spelled E-N-Z-O. And they spelled it E-N-Z-E-D-O.
Wait, his name is Enzo?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched Reboot?
Oh, that's
the animated show.
No.
Okay, main character is named Enzo. One of the main characters. Good show. Canadian show, actually. Actually, a defining type show, because it changed a lot of computer animated shows back in the day. But neither here nor there. So, speaking of World War Z, one of the coolest scenes, actually there was a couple. There's things that's like, I don't know if you've ever read the book either. But the one scene where Brad Pitt's like, oh, he thinks he's been bit. So he runs up to the edge of the building, gives himself a 60-second countdown or whatever. And if he feels that he was going to turn, he'd let himself drop rather than keeping carrying the infection. It's like, that was cool as hell, because that was smart and very thoughtful and very well developed into that process. But just so you know, have you ever read the book?
No.
Okay, so the book is about a journalist cataloging experiences of people through that outbreak. So the movie is essentially the precursor to most of the story in the book, and the epilogue in the movie is essentially the book.
Really?
Which was a neat way for the story to go.
How did you like the book?
I enjoyed the book. It was... It was like a bunch of anecdotal differences. It wasn't like one story. It was a bunch of stories. And it's like the different views and how things would people react in an actual zombie apocalypse was some people are going to have great experiences and be able to survive, do good things, combine, group, everything else like that. And some people are going to be written right off in the first 10 minutes sort of thing. It's like I like the way that they did that, which is funny because I'm part of a writing group that – put out a book, what was it, 10, 12 years ago now? It was, what the hell was it called? I have a copy of it somewhere. There was about 60 of us. We all basically put in a one-page, two-page letters from the dead. That was basically our last letters to a family member or something saying, hey, zombie apocalypse, oh, we're dead. By the way, here's my last words, kind of thing. It was cool.
So what did you think of how they did the movie then?
World War Z? I think they did a really good version of it. The CG bugged me when they started getting to the big mass shots.
Yeah.
I liked a bunch of things, the way that they had the Israeli forces, the way that they were operating, the way the CDC and then, what was the base that was in Scotland? A couple of things. And then the concept about they didn't want to infect the people with viruses for cancer and everything else. They just wanted fresh, good, healthy bodies. And I thought that was a really cool twist.
Yeah, it's been a while since I watched it. I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah, there's the two scenes, the one with Brad Pitt on the roof and then the other one with the garbage truck paralleling down the road and taking off the car door that they were in. It's like, whoa, what the hell? Thought both of those were cool. Oh, and then when the Israeli soldier, the girl, was like, how did you know that was going to work? When he chops off her arm.
Yeah.
I didn't. I just thought it might be the right thing. Thought it was hilarious. Because it's true. You really don't know, right?
Yeah.
So, zombie movies. We like zombie movies. But we don't like all zombie movies.
Yeah. I enjoyed Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead is awesome. It really, truly is. And there's a bunch of movies like that. Some of them really low in the budget areas. And some in the same production value as Shaun of the Dead. Now, I thought Shaun was awesome. Let's see. the amusing horror zombie movies. There is a few of them. I try not to try and do this off the top. Oh, you might like a movie called Maggie.
Okay, with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So Schwarzenegger, not being humorous, he's being a serious dad character. Mm-hmm. His daughter got bit in the city, the big city, and has come home basically to die.
How have I never heard of that movie? I thought I'd seen almost every Schwarzenegger movie out there.
It's the first movie he did after coming back from being the governor.
Really? And yep. I never even heard of it.
And I do not like tearjerkers. And this is a zombie tearjerker.
Well, my brother really enjoys zombie movies, too. I'll have to get him over here and we'll watch it together because he likes Schwarzenegger and he likes zombies.
Exactly. Warm Bodies is a rom-com about a zombie who becomes unzombie.
I have been wanting to see that one.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's actually enjoyable.
I have not seen it, but yeah.
There's a BBC miniseries called Dead Set, which is making fun of Big Brother. So they're on the BBC's version of, and this is actually the real BBC set of Big Brother. Mm. And the apocalypse breaks out while they're in the house and they have no idea what's happened.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, so I do like the apocalyptic stuff and the dystopian stuff. I'm trying to think of a good apocalyptic movie.
There's a few. I would say Damnation Alley, but it wasn't a good movie.
Oh, you know what I really liked was, what was that Clive Barker movie?
Books of Blood?
No.
Oh,
You know,
Night. What the hell was it?
Were there the a one bunch with of... Pinhead? You know, like
oh,
with
Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, yeah.
Did you know that Pinhead was actually just a bit character in the first book?
In the first movie, or
in the first novel, in the first story that he wrote, Pinhead was just supposed to be a throwaway character. He wasn't actually supposed to be a main character.
Oh. Yes, I remember that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I love Hellraiser. The first movie was awesome. The second one was good. Then they got a little bit pedantic. The last one that they just came out with was actually pretty good.
Yeah, usually I find that, you know, the first movie is usually the best. And then the second movie, it's okay, but, you know, like not quite as good. But then after that, they kind of lose it. You know, like that happened with the Matrix movies that happened with
did you watch the Animatrix?
The Terminator movies, like I thought Terminator the first one and actually the Terminator, I thought the second movie was even better than the first. That's the first time I've ever had that experience.
It happens a bit, but I will agree with you on Terminator. I love both of them. Aliens is the same way. A lot of people will say that Aliens, the second one, is their favorite over the franchise, but I'm usually with a franchise, I like all of it, unless I really hate one of them, which is very rare. Because I love Tremors, I love Critters, I love those kinds of cheesy movies that actually sometimes border on being serious versus cheesy.
Yeah.
But speaking of The Matrix, did you see the Animatrix?
The what?
Animatrix. It was actually technically the third... And then we had the third Matrix movie. So the Animatrix was a collection of short stories, but they were all animated by different animators, different types of stories, different types of things. And they connect a couple of the story bits from the movie 2 to movie 3.
No, I've never even heard of that.
I'm giving you another suggestion.
Yes.
Trust me, I'm pant loads full of video distractions.
Yeah, there's a new movie. I think it's on Prime. The Voyage of
the Demeter.
So, Demeter, yes. Yeah. I want to see
Demeter,
that.
Depending on who and how you talk to about that.
Yes. Yeah, I want to see that.
I've heard good things. It's on my list of movies to watch. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Because I have a little project as well where it's like I'm trying to figure out all of the movies that come out that are horror, fantasy, and science fiction related. There's like a... over the last 10 years, it has gone up consistently every year in quantity. 10 years ago, it was on average anywhere from 800 to about 1,000 movies on average. Now we're getting up to almost the point where it's 1,500 or so a year, including crappy movies as well as top-notch Hollywood.
Yeah, there's a series on Netflix right now, too. I think it's supposed to be like a comedy and a comedy drama or something like that with alien. So this alien comes and has to go undercover and he wants to kill humanity or something, but he ends up having to masquerade as a human.
Name? I know the show you're talking about. Illegal Alien, I think is it called.
Yeah, that sounds like
and
that.
And the
could
blonde
be
guy
it.
Who's the main actor was on Firefly Serenity. Oh, Santa Clarita Diet. Good call, Evie. I love that show. Did you ever see Santa Clarita Diet?
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to watch that Alien one. I want to check that out, see how that is. Because it's kind of like they were comparing it to sort of like Third Rock from the Sun, which I loved.
What about the giant head? Yes.
Yeah. I remember that Shatner show. Was perfect as the big giant head.
Yeah, and John Lithgow as the leader of the away party or whatever was actually really impressively hilarious most of the time.
He really was. And then after watching him on Third Rock from the Sun and then seeing him as a serial killer on Dexter was...
Yeah.
And then seeing him as... what do you call it? Winston Churchill on The Crown. He's
such
a good actor.
People are throwing suggestions out in the chat room. My favorite Martian, Tresse, Marvin the Martian. Oh, Jack did not like the Demeter. Can't remember why. What happened to John Lithgow? I don't know what happened to John Lithgow. Google it. Go on. Okay, I was going to say. I liked him. Wasn't he in Buckaroo Banzai as well?
I don't know.
I think he was.
I remember he was in Harry and the Hendersons.
Yes, he was definitely in Harry and the Hendersons. I actually have a plush toy of the Sasquatch.
Where did you get that?
I get weird stuff sometimes. A buddy dropped it off at one. Oh yeah, animated show Love, Death, and Robots. Definitely watch that if you haven't seen it. It's a bunch of short clips. Short little stories. All animated, different styles, different types.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all you have to do is go to my Facebook and you'll just see all the stuff that I post all the time about the shows and movies I watch.
Yeah, definitely. I'm taking notes.
Excellent. Because you know part of my plan is to take over the world, slowly but surely.
Like a zombie.
Sure, like that. But we have come to the end of the show and actually gone over, which is thankful that I don't have somebody who comes on after me. So is there anything else you'd like to share about how people can find you, find your stuff, that sort of thing?
Well, the best place to go is my website, which is valtobin.com. So valtobin.com. That has all my social media contact information on there as well, and goes in depth about all of my books and anywhere I might be, any events I'm attending. I got updated with the latest ones that I just registered for. So, I keep that relatively up to date. And that's the best place to go. It's easy to remember. It's just my name, valtobin.com.
It was easy to find. And you have articles on there, too.
I do, yes. I used to write for Suite 101, which is an online content magazine. And I've written for various magazines. I started out writing nonfiction, like tech articles, because I was a software and web application developer for 10 years. So I always loved to write. So I was doing tech articles for Community MX, but those aren't in there. That was very niche. But yeah, I took some of my articles from like Suite 101 and put them on my site.
Cool. Evie, you may want to check out Val Tobin. She's got some paranormal and occult topics that she talks about in there. I took a quick look through a couple of them. Evie likes the paranormal.
Yeah, I have my master's degree in parapsychology, so I studied like the occult stuff.
So I was going to talk about some of this stuff, but we got so much into everything else, and we just didn't have time. So maybe some other time you can come back and we can talk about more of the occult and the paranormal stuff.
Sure, that would be great. I always enjoy talking about that. Yes, I can certainly talk over time.
As I said earlier, I like to talk. I have no problem. It's why half the time most of my shows, some of my shows, are just me talking. Ask Jack and Evie. They listen every once in a while. Most of the time. Sometimes. Whatever.
Well, thank you so much for having me tonight. This has been fun.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on and having a chat with us. I just go and do my little bit, which says come back again every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check us out on the Facebooks. Check us out on the Instagrams. Sometimes on the Twitter, whatever. Okay, X, however it's called. All you all out there, have yourselves an amazing after-rotten good time. Check out Val Tobin's stuff. It seemed fun. I read the one short story. It was actually pretty engaging. That made me want to read the next book. It's cool. Enjoy. Be well. Do all that fun stuff. And as I hit this other button, as I do this thing, that's the next time we get into the next show next week. Thanks.